Lives that remind us about God meeting yourself in the sacred text. This is part 12. I want to look. I did a study quite like this at the Men's Brotherhood when we were doing those. It's not quite the same, but it's very similar. So for some of you guys, it'll be a bit of a review. Nehemiah, rebuilding through the rubble of life. Rebuilding through the rubble of life. I'm going to be looking at Nehemiah chapter 2. We'll cover pretty much the whole chapter, but I'm not going to read the whole chapter right now at the beginning of the study. Maybe just some background would be in order. Nehemiah has the task of leading a group of exiles who had been judged by God out of Persian captivity to rebuild the walls of the ancient city of Jerusalem. The worship had already been restored at the temple. Ezra and others in your Bible, you'll read of that account. But the city, so there's the temple, some worship restored, but the city, the walls around it aren't restored, aren't rebuilt. So you get this picture of a restored center of worship that's still vulnerable to outside attack. A simple way to maybe think of it is that the reconstruction process was the exact opposite, perhaps, of the deconstruction process when God had used Babylon to punish Judah for her adultery. That time, Judah as a whole was taken, then the city of Jerusalem and the temple. In the reconstruction process, first the temple is rebuilt, worship semi-restored, but the city walls weren't repaired, and that's what Nehemiah has as his assignment. So renewed worship came first, the restored center. Think of what this might picture. But it was still vulnerable to attack and danger because the walls of the city, the protective structures designed to preserve the worship of God, they weren't in place. And what I'm trying to say in all that is that conversion isn't exactly the same as ongoing reconstruction. Conversion is the beginning, the first steps. We too, the redeemed people, we live in this fallen world. Every one of us has areas of brokenness in some areas of our lives. Some people are surprised that problems don't disappear just because they've been saved, converted, born again, whatever term you want to use. Many things don't come together for us overnight. I wonder how many people wrestle with discouragement and even condemnation because they confused the beginning of the Christian life with the ongoing reconstruction of the life, confusing the beginning with the completion. So that's what I'm looking at with Nehemiah. I have, I think, 4 or 5 points. First, waiting until the time is right. Nehemiah 2, verse 1. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had not been sad in his presence. Now, some of the details matter, even though they don't seem that striking. There's an important truth kind of tucked in here. The month of Nisan, it's mentioned in the very first sentence of verse 1. It's about 5 months after Nehemiah first became aware of the problem. That was Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1, the month of Chislev, which would be somewhat comparison to our January, not quite. So about 5 months have passed. 5 months before Nehemiah does anything, he hears about the destruction, the walls not being built, the vulnerability of the temple and the worship. It breaks his heart. And he sits on it for 5 months. 5 months before Nehemiah does anything. He kind of just waits in God's presence. He does two things for 5 months. He prays, he seeks God, and he watches for the right moment. And then if you have the old King James, here's what you see in chapter 2, the first words, and it came to pass. What great words. It came to pass. Things just unfold. And Nehemiah's alert to it. He's been watching. One day, after about 5 months, something starts to crack. Nehemiah is alert to how God might begin to answer the prayers he's been praying for almost half a year. In the New Testament, Jesus called this kind of praying watching and praying. It's really important. Nehemiah prays, but he doesn't just pray. He's watching for God to crack a door open. He's knocking and he's waiting for something to open up. And he's ready to move when God acts. He's not assuming that his prayers take the place of something he'll be called to do. Here's what you see. Nehemiah's had this broken heart for what's going on in his homeland, Jerusalem. The walls around the city. It's broken his heart. He's been talking to God about it, and he's been watching, and he's been watching for about 5 months. It's for a lot of the qualities that we talk about faith and its power to move mountains, there's another element to faith. Faith has the ability to be patient, to wait for something. Look what happens. Point number two. And the king said to me, so this is, remember, half a year almost since Nehemiah becomes aware of the situation, starts seeking God about it and waiting, watching for an opportunity. Half a year later, the king said to me, why is your face sad? Not much, eh? Why is your face sad? You're not sick. This is nothing but sadness of heart. Nehemiah, then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's grave, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? And then the king said to me, what are you requesting? I love this. So I prayed to the God of heaven. I wonder how long that prayer took. I mean, Nehemiah knows he's on thin ice here. Artaxerxes is not a particularly godly man. Notice that Nehemiah has already prayed specifically about this problem. We see that in chapter 1, verse 11. Here's Nehemiah. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name. And give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Who's he thinking about? Artaxerxes. He works for Artaxerxes. Give me favor in the sight of this man. I was cupbearer to the king. So Nehemiah is anticipating. He's thinking things through. He anticipates as he prays. And now, much later, he sees this crack in the door. He has a chance to answer the king's question about his concern for his people, and he doesn't have to bring up the subject himself. Artaxerxes brings it up. Because Nehemiah has been praying, give me favor in the sight of this man. Now Nehemiah has to think. This is his moment. This is the moment he must not blow it. Between the king's question, what are you requesting? There's the question. That's in 2 verse 4. Between the king's question, what are you seeking, and Nehemiah's answer, What would that be? Seconds. Nehemiah prays. Oh God. There's that prayer. This is it. Help me. It's really instructive. Here's how this works. You see, because he's already been soaking his life in prayerful concern for about 5 months, it's only natural to reach out prayerfully in this moment of emergency. I think this is something like what Paul meant when he wrote about praying always or praying without ceasing. Emergency prayer, it doesn't have to be long, but it's effective and strong and well-defined when it's bathed in prolonged exercises of prayer behind the scenes. It's because Nehemiah has been praying for about half a year for this conversation that he sees the opportunity and he's able to just quickly, oh God, help me right here. And it counts. Because this is not the scream of an amateur. This is somebody who's been soaking in God's presence over this situation for 5 months. Point number three, prayer backed up by diligence. So here's Nehemiah. King asks the question, what's the problem, Nehemiah? Nehemiah prays. Nehemiah answers. 2:5. And I said to the king, what do you want me to do? What's up? I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and here's the important part, if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. It's a pretty bold request. There's two things that make this work for Nehemiah. First, the prayer. Talked a lot about that. Then the quick prayer. But there's something else in this verse. In addition to praying, notice in the middle of verse 5, if it pleases the king, what would make it please the king? If your servant has found favor in your sight, that the prayer life and good diligence go hand in hand and work well together is what I see in this text. Artaxerxes wants to help Nehemiah because he knows he's no slouch. He doesn't want to be without Nehemiah because he's found favor in the sight of the king. He couldn't afford to be without him. It's a really important point to keep in focus when you're asking God to use you, maybe in some area of ministry. There are dozens of applications. I'm praying for the salvation of my boss. That's great. Do you do a good job at work? Because that's going to help. You're praying for your teenager. That's good. Lots of people are. You provide a good example. Do you go to church regularly? You're praying for your church. It's great. Do you teach a class in Christian Ed or a core group? The power of prayer is always best united with the power of godly discipline. Four. Thinking the plan all the way through. Look at these verses, chapter 2, verses 6, 7, and 8. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, so how long will you be gone? And when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given me to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates, for the fortress of the temple, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, look, for the good hand of my God was upon me. Here's what I want you to see here. We're talking about rebuilding a life, the reconstruction of a life after the heart is won to Christ, reborn, but building a strong life, a defended life against all sorts of things from the outside. And you see where Nehemiah has been thinking about this for about 5 months. You see the request, you see his quick prayer. You see that he serves. He's done such a good job that the king is pleased with him to start with. And I talked about some application points there. There's something else here, though. There's something else about Nehemiah and his prayer life. He's already planning on opposition. Do you notice that? The king says, what do you need, Nehemiah? And he knows what he needs. He says, well, I'm going to need letters of permission. Because once I'm out of here, there's going to be all sorts of people who are going to want to stop me from doing this. And he doesn't just assume that because God answered his prayer and is opening this door, that he doesn't have to plan some of the details. Oh, and I'm going to need a letter for Asaph and the king's forest. You know what? Because you need materials to build walls. And he's thought about all this. So he prays, he does a good job, and he has a plan. He knows just because God has answered his prayer doesn't mean there's not going to be opposition to it down the road. And he's already planning on it. He's already thinking about the obstacles that are going to be in his way. The king doesn't bring any of that up. Nehemiah brings it all up. Please notice that faith and prayer don't exclude the need to think. God does sometimes call a person just to follow without any thought required, like Abraham. I'm simply here tonight telling you that's not the normal way in which he works in our lives. So Nehemiah, he could just get excited, oh, praise God, let's get these walls up. No. I want letters of permission in verse 7. I want the materials all lined up and waiting for me in verse 8. It just relates so clearly to the rebuilding of our lives after we come to Jesus. And I'm trying to find a nice way to say it, but one of the reasons some people succeed more than others is some plan and work and grow in God's will and think it through what the need is and what they can do, and others don't. They're just glad that Jesus died for them on the cross. And you should be. But that's not all there is to it. Most people don't lose out spiritually because they deny the resurrection of Jesus. They simply do little things like don't break the habits that fill the mind with trivial thoughts, or don't meet regularly with fellow Christians, or try and profess Christ while sampling the sins of the world. They don't have a plan to carry out the good intentions that they have for the Lord. They're just intentions. It's not Nehemiah. 5. Making sure you understand the real seriousness of the situation. I was looking at chapter 2, verses 11 to 16. This is it. I find this fascinating. So here he is. He's in Jerusalem now. Nehemiah's left. He's gotten to Jerusalem. Look what he does. So I went to Jerusalem, and I was there 3 days. And then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. He's not making a big fuss yet. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night to the valley gate, to the dragon spring, to the dung gate. I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. And then I went to the fountain gate and to the king's pool. But there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. And then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the gate, inspected the wall, And I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. I had not told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were there to do the work. You know what I'm seeing here? Nehemiah has heard about the walls. That's what broke his heart. Nehemiah wants to see how serious the situation is. Nehemiah, if he's going to deal with this properly, he refuses to make light of the task ahead of him and the nature of the problem. He doesn't want to whitewash over any problems. Nehemiah wants the truth. No matter how painful it may be, without that depth in honesty, he's not going to be ready to deal with the seriousness of this situation. How important it is, when we're rebuilding our own lives, to get an accurate picture, to call sinful habits, sinful habits. We live in a culture that makes light of anything. You have your truth. I have my truth. We each go our own ways. It's not a big deal. And what I see Nehemiah doing here is he wants to see how big the deal really is. Sinful habits, the depth of spiritual need, a lack of seriousness before the Lord, a lightness of repentance that doesn't get to the core of the issue. It's that Psalm 51 where David says, create in me a clean heart. I'm all messed up inside. So he wants to get a real accurate picture of the situation. He doesn't want to make light of it. 6, and we're done. Dealing with opposition. I talked about the provisions because he saw potential opposition. I'm not talking about that now. Dealing with opposition. Look at 19 and 20 of chapter 2. So they're there working on the walls, okay? If you took the time to study it, the walls are getting close to half their height. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Remember, he wanted letters of permission. He wanted that nailed down. Are you rebelling against the king? And then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper. We, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. Then look at verse 3. Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, yes, what are they building? If a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. You're not building anything. This isn't going to last. These marks were made after the walls were already half up. The minute you get serious about rebuilding anything in your life, following in God's ways, even when it's difficult, the minute you start, don't think for a minute that there isn't an enemy of your soul who's going to come and say, you tried this before. Didn't work then, did it? You're bound up in the same thing again. This will work for other Christians. It's not going to work for you. Anytime God starts to do something of substance in your life, the enemy will try and tear down what God builds up. And if I could encourage you in any way at all, it would be this. The minute, and you know that condemnation that can settle in on your own heart, the way the devil works, the minute that happens, you should know right off the bat, there must be something good God is doing here. It might not be done, and it might not look like much yet, but if God wasn't doing something, this enemy would leave us alone. He hates to see people set to do the work of rebuilding their lives. And so that's my picture of Nehemiah. That's my picture of Nehemiah. all of us confined areas, we're saved, born again, God's work of grace, forgiving, touching our hearts. But there's not one of us in this room, I'm sorry, there's not one of us in this room where the Lord can't come and say, I'd like to work on this in your life, Don. I'd like to rebuild this in your life. And set your hand to it. And do it with prayer, do it with patience, do it with diligence, and don't quit every time the devil tells you to. And everyone said,